I'd like to talk to you today about some of the work our research group is performing over in Cambodia, looking at arsenic contamination in the groundwater there from natural sources. My part of the project has been to look at arsenic leaching basically from the soil profile, which could be a possible contamination source to the groundwater from the natural sediments. And so in the background here, you can see it's a shot of Cambodia. And you can see it's inundated. It looks like this for 3 to 6 months out of the year. And in some parts of the country, it looks like this almost all year. So there are seasonal monsoon fluctuations, or monsoons, that lead to drastic fluctuations in water levels throughout the country. And so we can imagine this is a great place to study redox processes going on in soils and sediments. Okay. And so the scope of the arsenic problem is immense. Over in Asia, there's about 100 million people that are routinely exposed to an arsenic concentrations greater than the World Health Organization's limit of 10 micrograms per liter. And so this is a common tube well that was drilled in response to what was essentially a massive problem with people drinking surface waters. And so people were drinking the surface waters in Southeast Asia, getting sick because of the pathogens in them. But unfortunately, it was unknown there was a lot of naturally occurring arsenic in the groundwater. And so people started showing chronic signs of arsenic toxicosis. And scientists went back in and realized there's an arsenic problem that was it needed to be addressed. And so our study site is in the upper Mekong Delta, just south of Phnom Penh. And what's interesting about the whole Mekong Delta is that solid phase arsenic concentrations aren't really very high compared to worldwide background. In fact, they're quite low. They're around 10 to 20 ppm. And so that's actually lower than I think what's in the Mississippi River Delta. And yet there's not as much of an arsenic problem here as there certainly is over there. And so we can imagine what is happening is that up in the Himalayas, which are the source waters for the major river systems in Southeast Asia, we have the weathering of arsenic-bearing minerals such as pyrite, or arsenic-bearing pyrite, arsenium pyrite, arsenopyrite, that weather out to iron oxides, to which arsenic is essentially sorbed. And so these oxides are then transported down the river systems and are deposited into the floodplains, in this case, the Cambodian floodplain. Then we can imagine that it's a tropical climate, there's a lot of vegetation, it dies, it's submerged, and gets co-deposited with the sediments as well. So there's a lot of organic carbon, there's arsenic-rich sediments, well, low arsenic concentrations, but there's sediments that contain arsenic that is desorbable. And then we can imagine, it's pretty small writing, but I just have down here that in the sediment profile, there's redox processes which can influence the desorption of arsenic, as Kate just pointed out in her talk, for example, iron reduction. And so we can imagine number one here is just dissolution of iron-bearing oxyhydroxides. That can release arsenic to the sediment profile. Arsenic reduction has been shown to influence arsenic mobility. Arsenic 3 is more mobile than arsenic 5 under flow conditions. And then possibly sulfate reduction can influence arsenic mobilization as well. And so this is a shot of a tributary to one of the Southeast Asian river systems. You can see up in the Himalayas this iron-rich sediment flowing down and depositing. And when it's deposited, it's an oxidized state. It's really that reddish iron oxide-rich sediment. And as it is transformed to more reduced iron minerals, arsenic is essentially released either through reductive dissolution or through arsenic reduction. And then also there's other conditions which can influence arsenic mobility as well. At high pH, arsenic can desorb. In the presence of competing anions such as phosphate, arsenic will desorb. And so what we've really tried to do, just really quick, here's a shot of a soil profile in Cambodia near one of our field sites. You can just see a profile very rich in iron oxides and containing an arsenic concentration of about 10 ppm throughout. So what we're doing is we're going in and we're, at least my part of the project has been to identify the near surface, which in this case is about the 0 to 7 meter depth profile for arsenic release, and also to determine the actual mechanisms for arsenic release within this profile, and lastly to see if arsenic is leaching from this profile down into the groundwater where it could be a problem. So this is our field site, and with the help of Mickey Sampson with RDI, it's a non-governmental organization operating in Cambodia, just to do a variety of things to improve human health. With his help, we've been able to go and drill a lot of wells. These red dots are wells, multi-point wells, and additionally set up surface water monitoring sites and install suction lysimeters in the soil profile to get a really comprehensive picture of what the arsenic concentrations in the aquifer look like and in the soil profile. And so in the next slide, I'm going to show you a cross-section of what arsenic concentrations look like in the aquifer. And it's going to run in this yellow line from the Mekong up into this wetland. And this is basically what it looks like. And this data, I just want to point out, has been Matt Paul Azzotto has really spearheaded collecting well water data, and it fits in nicely the whole story. What he's basically shown is that arsenic is being released or is soluble below some abandoned oxbows that undergo periodic or seasonal flooding. And so what happens in the system is the Mekong River overflows its banks during the monsoon season. The abandoned oxbows and the wetlands over here flood, and the net movement of groundwater therefore is down as the Mekong River recedes. And so flooding occurs, groundwater net movement is down towards back towards the river, so it's kind of this flushing cycle. And so coincidentally, we see that his flow lines match up very well with what the arsenic concentrations look like. But one other thing I want to point out too, as a little background, is that even though he has these very high arsenic concentrations, upward of about 1 ppm in solution, outlined in red, there's really arsenic throughout this whole profile. Even in areas that aren't as highly contaminated, we still see 100 microgram per liter regularly. So what we've done is we've gone into one of these abandoned oxbows where some of the arsenic appears to be originating, and go and install more multi-point wells and some piezometers. And so this is one of the abandoned oxbows at our field site, just a blow up. So installing more wells and a lot of just shallow wells and lysimeters and some soil moisture monitoring equipment as well. And at this site, this is it, one of the abandoned oxbows. This is during the dry season. You can see it's still pretty wet. The water table in these agricultural fields is only about 50 centimeters below the surface. And then every year it undergoes inundation. So there's wide swings in redox activity in this near surface profile. We also put up these really cool, I didn't put them up, the people we work with put up these really cool towers that we can monitor or sample wells with even after it floods. Okay, and so in these oxbows, this is what the arsenic profile looks like. So this is ground level, and I have everything in meters above sea level, but this is about 7 meters below the surface right here. And what we see is in our lysimeters, in our suction lysimeters, and our wells is a nearly linear increase. It's linear down to about this point, and then it appears to increase quite a bit. But basically what we see is arsenic concentrations increasing quite rapidly as a function of depth. And just for reference, this red line is the World Health Organization recommended limit. So we only have to go about 10 centimeters below the surface to actually get concentrations of arsenic that are unacceptable. Okay, and these are some iron 2 distributions in the same well systems. And so we see generally the same thing. We see increasing iron 2 concentrations as a function of depth. And below 2 meters, we see iron on the x-axis here and arsenic on the y-axis correlate very, very well, which is suggestive of a reductive dissolution process occurring. We'll get into that more in a minute. And so additionally, we see an alkalinity profile that also mimics the arsenic and also mimics the iron. So using this as a proxy for biological activity, we know that iron reduction and active reductive processes could be occurring within these saturated sediments continuously, which could potentially be releasing the arsenic. And so the actual form of arsenic in the soil, what we've done is we took intact cores down to actually greater than 4 meters, down to about 7 meters, preserved them anaerobically in the field, and went to the synchrotron and performed some synchrotron mapping on some of the sediments that we just smeared on some tape. And what we found is that in the near surface environment, from about 0 to 0.5 meters at the top of our profile, basically, is that most of the arsenic in the form of these hot spots that we see at the synchrotron is arsenic 5 sorbed oxyhydroxide. And that's not too surprising, especially since this depth is above the seasonal water table, except, of course, when it's inundated. But these samples were taken during the dry season. Below that, below the water table, we see a mix of arsenic 3 and arsenic 5, sorbed oxyhydroxide. Below that, we start to see a few arsenic sulfides, but probably not enough to represent a significant sink of arsenic if orthogenic pyrite is forming and incorporating arsenic. So the bottom line here is that we see iron reduction going on throughout our profile. We see arsenic 3 forming at lower depths, and we know that both arsenic reduction and iron reduction can mobilize arsenic. And so these are probably likely the major contributors of arsenic release within our profile. And along with some of the synchrotron data, we've performed some extensive selective extractions, chemical extractions on our sediments as well. And really, basically, all the iron or arsenic is phosphate extractable, so it's all exchangeable. It can all be desorbed from the sediment surface, or iron oxyhydroxide. And so what we're doing now is we're trying to put some calculations together, and this is just the start of them, to actually go back and try to more or less model what the arsenic could be doing in our system. And so if we were to imagine a meter by meter cube of soil extending down to about 700 centimeters with a surface water influx, and arsenic existing in the profile at about 10 ppm, which we've measured, dry weight, and downward groundwater flow, and we know this because we've, just from hydrologic data that we've been collecting for a long time, there's a net downward groundwater flow. We can imagine that arsenic is continuously being released based on our alkalinity profiles and our other data into the groundwater, resulting in increasing arsenic as a function of depth. And so if we just apply some simple parameters here, a certain hydraulic gradient, hydraulic conductivity that we've measured in the field or taken measurements from in the field, and an assumed rate of arsenic release of about 10 micrograms per liter released from the sediments per year, we predict some values of arsenic in the pore water as a function of depth. And this is what we've actually measured. And they're not lining up too badly at this point. So at this point, it's looking like iron arsenic reduction can mobilize arsenic to the pore water, and it's fairly consistent throughout our profile. Okay, and what we're doing now is we're basically taking some sediments from the field, some core samples, and performing some intact core leaching experiments with them to try to better examine the mechanisms and potentially in some of the rates of arsenic desorption from the sediments from different depths. And with that, I'd just like to thank all the people we work with in Cambodia, specifically Mickey Sampson and the RDI staff, some of my group members, and our funding agencies.
Thank you. Any questions?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. So if you go back, if we were to go back and look at our actual profile, it's not exactly linear. And so what I was basically fitting was a linear relationship between depth and arsenic concentration. And so we probably have differing rates of arsenic release in the different depths of sediment just based on kind of small scale heterogeneity, basically. And so that's probably why I'm underestimating or overestimating at certain depths. Yep.
One last question.
Is there any information on how land use change in nature and health is affecting the influx of arsenic bearing environment?
Yeah, that's a great question. So right now, and hopefully this answers part of it at least, there isn't. Cambodia is relatively untouched compared to other areas in Southeast Asia. So, for example, in Bangladesh, there's been massive installation of tube wells and a lot of water drawdown, aquifer drawdown, just for irrigation purposes. In Cambodia, that hasn't really happened. So in our system is relatively pristine. We have a fairly good indication of what's going on. All I can say to that is imagine with more tube well installation or irrigation that this whole system is going to change a lot. As for like damming the rivers or moving sediments around, it's happening all the time. So I don't have a really really good answer for you there.
Yeah. Thank you, Benjamin.